This is Pixel Splitters, your absolute favorite conversation movie news podcast with your hosts, Josh.
We never know when we'll need to go back to episode 4.
And Willis. In that same vein, I'm like, not in the same, in the reverse of that vein, in that artery, I don't know. Join us each week as we break down the latest movie news, TV news, and general industry news and debate about what it all really means. Hello, 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 dear listeners. We have returned from our post-Oscars hiatus.
Yes.
Wasn't really a planned hiatus. We just kind of didn't do an episode after that. But we're back. We're here. We are ready to split some more pixels. Obviously, I haven't hosted in a little while.
That's okay.
This week, we're going to talk about a few things. We're going to talk about Late Night with the Devil.
Yes.
Which is a new film coming out, and there's been some controversy around it. In that they seem to have used some AI for some very specific parts of that film. And there has been blowback and then retorts, and there's a whole kind of thing going on in that. So we're going to talk about that.
Yep.
We are going to talk about how hard it is out there right now for studio executives. It's rough, you guys.
Poor David Zasloff.
Poor Zazzy. They have been losing their jobs.
Yeah.
Lots of studio executives looking for jobs right now. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about that and kind of what that means for the industry. And then we're going to touch on something that we've hinted at in different capacities in the past, but preservation, film preservation.
Yes.
Very important. But a lot of that conversation is usually around film preservation. But digital preservation is a thing too.
Yeah.
You know, just because something's on a hard drive doesn't mean it's permanent. And we're going to talk about what that means and what's up with that.
Absolutely.
But before we do that, Josh, how about you take us through our weekly releases?
I will do just that because in theaters this week, we have Adam Wingard's follow-up to Godzilla v. Kong, Godzilla x Kong, New Empire. Hitting theaters on the 29th. I don't know about this one, honestly. I will see it for sure. It's hard to go back after seeing Godzilla Minus One and being like, watching the trailer for Godzilla X Kong feels like,
let's go back to Hollywood.
Yeah, a step in the wrong direction, but I don't know. I like Adam Wingard. I thought Godzilla v. Kong was like pretty fun for what it's worth. I wish I'd seen it in a theater, you know?
Yeah. But these movies are fun is the key term. They're not, you know, cinema. Well, I don't want to say that, but they're not meant to be followed for their story. And
yes, it's spectacle. It's spectacle movie.
Yeah.
And then we have, I believe, a new Liam Neeson film, In the Land of the Saints and the Sinners, hitting theaters on the 29th as well.
Yes.
Adding once again to my Liam Neeson Against the World list on Letterboxd. He keeps cranking these babies out. We'll see what
this
happens.
This is, I believe, I don't know if this is specifically, but the return of Jack Gleason, who played Joffrey on Game of Thrones.
Oh.
And stepped away from acting for a very long time because everybody
hated him because he played a character. Horrible.
Yes. So I believe this is one of the first things we've seen from him since then. So.
Oh, well, you know what? Maybe I'll check it out just for that, because honestly, don't hate actors for their characters. That's ridiculous. We need to separate that out a little bit.
Also, Liam Neeson's character's name is Finbar Murphy.
He's trying to do the Denzel thing where like every character is an awesome name, and like Finbar... I don't know if that's even a name to begin with. I'll be checking it out regardless, but that's what's hitting theaters. For streaming for shows, we have We Were the Lucky Ones hitting Hulu on the 28th. We have The Baxters hitting Prime on the 28th. We have Gentlemen in Moscow hitting Paramount Plus on the 29th. We have Renegade Nell hitting Disney Plus on the 29th. A Fraggle Rock show, Fraggle Rock colon Back to the Rock. A new season hitting Apple TV Plus on the 29th. That's pretty cool. Then we have Parrish hitting AMC Plus on the 31st. For movies, not a whole lot going on here. Although I do miss stuff because streamers just drop things now with no warning. We have The Truth versus Alex Jones, which could be interesting, honestly, hitting Max on the 26th. We have Tig Notaro, a new Tig Notaro special, if you like Tig. Hello again, hitting Max on the 26th. And then we have The Wages of Fear, which, honest to God, man, they're remaking this movie? This is an insanely obscure film from, like, the 70s that I love. But they remade The Wages of Fear, hitting Netflix on the 29th. I don't think I'm going to be checking this out. If you want to watch Wages of Fear, watch the original. It is amazing.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's really weird. But yeah, anyway, that's what's coming out this week, dear listener. And without further ado, let's talk about Late Night with the Devil.
Yes. So Late Night with the Devil is the new David S. Melchin film. Mm-hmm. Good to see him getting starring roles, you know.
I love him.
He's traditionally been, love him. Absolutely. He's traditionally amazing. Been a character actor, but I'm excited to see him lead. But there's been some controversy.
Yes.
Do you want to sort of walk us through? I think, didn't you say you watched this unfold?
I did. This started to unfold on Twitter, or I guess X, formerly known as Twitter, where people who had just seen the film, actually, I think this started on Letterboxd because somebody posted a review that's saying this movie is really good, but it sucks that they used AI, to which all of Twitter went, what? How could a period film that takes place in, I think, like the 70s have AI in there? And it turns out that there were a couple of transitional slides or title slides or something, still images that the filmmakers had used AI in some manner, and then they claim that artists had then gone over and just used the AI as a starting point.
Mm.
Alas, this is not a good look because we just came out of an entire, in essentially a strike for two different guilds that was based around not using AI, and so it left a really, really bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, and it kind of led to I don't think it's actually going to work, but a boycott of the film. People are saying, like, don't watch the film, which I have some interest, I have some feelings about, but the AI debate is starting now with an independent, low-budget horror film that is going to hit Shudder. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
I would have not thought that this is what was going to happen first. But here we are.
It's weird. It's tough because, like, it's one of those things that, like, and I think David S. Melchin mentioned something along these lines, but, like, this is coming. Like, this is a conversation we have to have. This is something that we have to, like, debate and, like, discuss and, you know, adjust to.
And hold people accountable.
Yeah. In that same vein, I'm like, not in the same, in the reverse of that vein, in that artery, I don't know.
like, sure.
This is, from what I'm seeing, this is not a huge undertaking in terms of AI.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is not like, you know, I compare it to when they did AI on the Anthony Bourdain documentary.
Yeah.
You know, where they generated a couple of his clips. I think the AI on the documentary is like a bigger incident than this.
Absolutely.
Having a handful of frames AI generated, not a huge, comparatively not a huge thing compared to some of the conversations we've been having in the past like year.
Absolutely. You
know, of like completely replacing people and things like that.
The entire Secret Invasion intro.
Yeah, exactly. Things like, so my initial reaction to this was like, okay, guys, like, let's not flip out. And I chewed on it for a little bit. And I'm like, but that's how it starts.
That's how it starts.
It's like, you know, you give a little bit on this and then they're like, oh, okay, we'll do that. And then we get something else that's a little bit more than that. But then you just have to justify going from where you are to where that is, as opposed to going from zero to where that. So like,
right.
It's tough. Like it's like, I want to say like, I'm not going to not go see. I'm not going to not watch this movie.
Yeah.
Because of the AI on it.
Right.
I don't know if I'm going to watch this movie because it seems to be like a horror movie. And I'm like, you know, but like, I don't necessarily, I don't see an issue with it on a film by film basis. Like, I don't see any, like, this does not detract from the reputation of this film for me.
Sure.
But slippery slope, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem, is like, it has to be important because it's slippery slope. We're just going to end up at the bottom of this hill drowning in AI because bit by bit we were like, I guess that's fine. I guess that's fine.
Right. Exactly. If you give, like you said, if you give a little bit, this is just the starting point. And that's kind of, I tweeted something the other day that's in a similar vein where I'm like, this movie looks amazing. Like, it really does. Yeah. It's getting really good reviews. We talked about how much we love David. And so I honestly blame the directors because they've put us in a position of being like, what do you do here? Do you boycott an actually good film, or do you see it and maybe have that be used in a meeting saying, look how well this film did that had AI in it? Who knows if that's actually going to happen? And it's weird because they said, yeah, it was only a couple stills throughout. The entire backdrop that is behind him was AI generated. Like, that's the point. It's like, yeah, it's only a couple stills, but it's in the whole film. Like, it's not like you can just, and then somebody directly under that was like, hey, I did this in 2 hours. And drew a skeleton. It was a skeleton. It's not like it's something that couldn't have been done by someone in like an hour, you know? And the other thing was that the filmmakers had said, like, well, you know, we were using this before. This film was made like 2021, I think, something like that. So it was before these discussions. At the same time, I look back and I'm like, dude, we've been having the AI discussion since, what, the 60s? Like, this is not something new. Like, we understand how AI functions and how it works. Yeah. And it's not that it's, oh, you know, maybe taking jobs away from people. Like, that's part of it. But it's also like, AI steals stuff to train itself. Like, that's what it is. So there are so many different levels to this. And I'm kind of like, just don't know where to land on the issue because I want to see the film. You know, do I pirate it?
Well, and the argument, just like, no, that's hilarious. No, well, and the thing too is like, if it's like the argument of this was before these conversations happened, it's like, well, which is it? It's like, this was something from before all these conversations happened, and it was such an undertaking that we couldn't change it before we release the movie because it's 2024.
Yeah.
Like, if you shot in 2021, like, these conversations have been happening. And like you said, like, if somebody can do it in like 2 hours and it's just a still, like, I know enough about like video editing to say like, this is easily like swappable.
Yes.
You know, and like, there's almost like a responsibility that after these conversations happened, you look back at what you did.
Right.
And make that call of like, is that something that should still stand? You know what I mean? So like, saying we did it a long time ago is bullshit because like,
doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Like, it, the movie came out now and it's not like it's been sitting done on a shelf for 3 years.
Right. Like, you couldn't touch it.
And even if it was done, like, yeah, it's not like you can't touch it and just do like a little fix on it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a weird situation.
Yeah, I don't care for this situation. I still want to see this movie.
Me too, which is a huge bummer. Like, all they had to do, and it's weird because the day following all of that, there were a bunch of postings that are saying like studios are in talks with, I think it was OpenAI or Midjourney or one of the major like AI companies to like integrate. And I'm like, did we not just do, what were the strikes for? If the studio executives are going to say, well, we're still
that's the thing is like, I think we could only assume that once the guild deals were finalized, like, the studios were just going to fill up everything up until that point. Like, let's get to just be in front of that line.
Right.
But like, we won't go over it, but like, let's get right up to it. So it's, you know, and that's the thing is like, this is going to be a thing.
Yeah,
it is. It's just like, this is going to happen. How it happens is like what we need to talk about, and it needs to be. And like, that's the thing is like, this conversation almost needs to happen with a small film like this so that we can be like, well, how do we feel? Like, let's talk about how we feel about this. And it's weird because this is what this movie's about now.
Yeah.
This movie's not about David Dustmalchian like becoming a leading man.
No.
You know,
it's about AI. So, it's unfortunate.
So, I don't know. I still want to see this movie.
I do too. I'll see it. I'll watch it on Shudder. Yeah. But yeah. Boy, oh boy.
Yeah. Speaking of studio execs and AI, I suppose.
Yes.
Let's talk about Hollywood contraction.
Yeah.
So I don't think it would come really as a surprise to anyone that Hollywood is correcting itself. Between the strikes last year and the, I won't say failing, but the like re-coordinating, I guess, of streaming services and all this kind of stuff is like, we are not in the full, like...
It's not the golden years.
strapping ourselves to a rocket ship and blasting off to the moon kind of Hollywood right now. And part of that is, I think a lot of the studios are readjusting and consolidating. And I mean, we've talked about consolidation.
Yep, merging.
A bunch of times on this. And it's a whole thing because a lot of Hollywood executives don't have jobs.
Yeah.
There was an article that came out on Deadline earlier this past week that was basically like, there's a lot of activity on LinkedIn of studio executives looking for work.
Yeah. In fact, Deadline has a Hollywood contraction series going on right now where they're just talking about this stuff as it unfolds. And this latest article happened to be about executives, which is funny because nobody really talks about them unless it's at the top 0.1%, which is, Bob Iger, Zaslav, Ted Sarandos, like the big boys. And so you don't really think about everyone who... isn't pulling in $20 to $50 million a year. They're pulling in $300,000 a year or $150,000 a year,
Yeah.
And those are the jobs that are either getting slashed like completely, or they're having to take like a substantially less pay, which also, cry me a river, dude, like it is what it is.
But I went from 500 grand to 300 grand.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, everything's, flipping upside down. But it is an interesting situation that everyone finds themselves in right now. And I think that, especially for me, you think that companies know what they're doing and that they have some kind of, not like a plan necessarily, but they have a way to keep themselves afloat. And I guess maybe that is just cutting a bunch of jobs that cost you, like if you can cut four people's salary and that's $2 million less you have to spend a year. And what are those people even doing? Like, I'm being crass, but it's like, what do a lot of these executives do that you're paying them hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars a year,
Yeah. And the way I look at it, and I this is my point of view based on my time working in like a media company and, in which we went through, like while I was there, there were several rounds of layoffs. And the best way I can kind of articulate it, and none of this is good, like all the layoffs and all that shit, it's terrible. And but the way I can assess it is this stuff, what works is constantly in shift, it changes constantly and you can't build a team that is going to be immune to all of that change.
For sure.
So like the point of reference I have in my head, and this, I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but I worked at Vox Media. I don't know. Shout out, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
during when I worked at Vox when Facebook video first became a thing and it was huge and it was profitable. And like there was a actual connection between like views of something on Facebook and financial reward, it was great. And there were huge teams that were built out that were specifically there to create content for Facebook. And then over the course of like a year and a half, that didn't pan out the way everyone thought it was going to. You know what I mean? Like people didn't respond to Facebook video the way they thought they were going to. Like it was different. Like it's not that they didn't, but like it wasn't the way they thought. And so like, there had to be a correction.
Right.
And that's a correction is a super callous way to like talk about people's jobs and livelihood. But like, that's what it is at the corporate level of just like, the ground has shifted and we have to like adjust to try and keep up with what's going on.
It's business.
It's business. Yeah. And to come back from my tangent here, like, that's what's going on is like Hollywood is contracting. And, you know, it's not that these people, these executives were, you know, not doing anything. We're just like, oh, yeah, I'm getting paid $500,000 to like sit in my office around and like do coke and like point at scripts and be like that one. And then that gets 50 million. You know, it's not like that, but it's like it's contracting and you got to find ways to stay afloat. And like shit can shift in like 2 months, 3 months, you know.
Yeah.
The strikes in the past year have changed everything.
Everything.
You know what I mean? You know, there's all of the arguments and all of the concessions or agreements that were made, you know, to get everybody back to work. But like Hollywood was shut down for months and months and months. And like,
yeah,
that doesn't just not have repercussion.
100%. Yeah. Well, and I think part of it is, you know, Hollywood has seen contractions happen a lot over the years. It just, as technology changes, as the world changes, you know, society, culture, things happen. I think what's happening now is different only because, like, the contraction started right after 2019, which was, you know, like, obviously COVID. Like, it was weird because 2019 was, I think, the best year ever for Hollywood. And then it was all of these one after another things that just kept happening. And so normally you'd see the contractions start to, I guess, retract the other direction, protract. Yeah, I guess.
Expand.
Expand. There you go.
Recover.
That makes a lot more sense. But it hasn't started yet. And I think that's what's making people so nervous. It's like usually you don't have 6 years between when things start to turn around again. And so people are like, is it going to? Because we're watching it change in real time. And we just had a conversation about AI, which we never would have had early last year, you know?
Yeah. Well, so, and the recovery, I think, arguably could have started early. Like, I think before the strikes.
Before the strikes.
Kind of starting to recover, you know?
Absolutely.
How many articles did you see that were like, theaters are back?
Yeah, Top Gun saved everything.
You know? Yeah, exactly. But then, like, we kind of, you know, this is nothing negative on the strikes or anything like that, but like that recovery got kind of shot in the foot by the strikes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so we're like contracting again and again and again. And like, I think it's good. I think this is going to go on for a little while.
Well, streamers are still not really making money. So like what it might, I mean, we're in a weird position, not we specifically, but the industry. We're actually in a great position because we get to talk about it, but it's like, where does the line have to hit? Because Warner Brothers is not in the positive, you know, I'm sure they're still laying people off left and right. You know, I think Disney's in a similar position too. Like, where does it have to hit before things start to actually turn around in the way that the industry wants to see, you know?
Well, and like the question really is like, what does a turnaround look like?
Yeah.
You know, is a turnaround like going back to like, yeah, there's $5 billion movies in theaters a year.
Right.
I don't know if that's what it is.
Right.
You know, I think we're contracting and then we're going to kind of shift and like expand in a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
I made a shoulder movement with expand. There,
yes.
Dear listener, that, I feel like my voice did a very strange thing,
but it was because
the visual. Yes. It was because of the shoulder thing there. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, there's a lot to watch with the contraction of Hollywood, and I think this article and like looking at executives on LinkedIn is a really unique perspective to catalog this change.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's. It sucks for the executives.
Yeah.
Kind of, I guess. I mean, again, hard to have a lot of sympathy for. I don't get my $5 million bonus this year, but.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, you know, I haven't looked at any of these LinkedIn postings, but I'm wondering if they're like, oh, I can't find a job that will pay me as much as they used to. And it's like, that's probably part of it where they're like, well, I'm fishing for that $500,000 salary.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the question really becomes too, and this is something worth exploring of like, we talked about this with the strikes, is how many people, how many executives right now are kind of just bailing on the industry?
Yeah.
And how many of them are like going to be the people that greenlight, you know, the films coming from, you know, the next Scorsese or the next, I don't know. Who's the big name for like the next now, do you think?
I mean, Scorsese's pretty good. Tarantino, maybe. Yeah.
They seem like an older generation at this point, though. I want to say, like, who's the next, like, James Mangold?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah. It's weird.
Anyway.
We'll see what happens. Weird.
We'll see what happens.
Constantly in flux right now in a big way. Yeah.
It might be interesting to do, like, an episode just about the contraction of Hollywood and where we can find different perspectives of it.
And like really look too, because I'm sure there's data about everything, about a number of people working in this field versus this field, average salary. Like I'm sure there's a ton of information out there.
Well, and like, you know, box offices aren't doing what they used to and all this different stuff. There's something to
number
be
of films made
there.
In a year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So.
So I don't know. It's a weird time in Hollywood.
It is. It is.
We say from the East Coast.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I don't really have a segue here because this is on a very different end of what we're talking about.
It is, but it's also a weird time in Hollywood because, I mean, the way that things used to be preserved just aren't that way anymore. We're talking about preservation, folks. That's what we said at the beginning.
Yes.
Digital preservation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which has more problems than you'd think because I mean, this is how I was. Not really, because I've always known about tech. But a lot of people are like, oh, it's on a thumb drive. Like, it'll be there for me whenever I want. Or it's on a SD card. It's on my hard drive. I'll be able to access that.
Yeah.
Not so much, potentially.
So, yeah. There's a mentality of like, yeah, if something's digital, it's set forever.
It's there. It's code. You know? We're there.
Like, I have all of our files of I have all of our files of Pixel Splitters here. Like, on my Google Drive.
Yep.
And I'm like, it's on Google Drive. Like, it'll be fine forever.
We're good.
You know, why I think I need all of the work files for all of our, you know, 136 episodes of...
Do you
have them too?
I have them all backed up.
Are we keeping doubles of all of this?
Mate, probably. But you know what? Okay. We never know when we'll need to go back to episode 4.
But anyway. It's only been 2.5 years. But like, that's the kind of thing is like, a lot of people are like, yeah, well, it's on a hard drive. It's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Whatever. You know. Digital equals safe. We got to worry about film, which is like degrading over time.
Yes.
And that's like not so much true.
No, in more ways than one. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there are the big studios that all of their big releases are no doubt backed up in some kind of capacity, you know, whether it's, you know, on some kind of massive central server or some kind of like distributed server or backed up on LTO tape or whatever, you know, archiving is like a whole big thing in the big studios.
Yeah.
The question becomes more around like not big studios,
mm-hmm.
you know, not Godzilla versus Kong or Godzilla X Kong, which
that's
just
going
rolls
into
off the tongue.
Library of Congress. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, that's, you know, And not for nothing, but like is probably distributed in a bunch of different places and like backed up and double backed up and triple backed up.
Absolutely.
It's the indie films that are the most in trouble. But it's the guy who, you know, pours his heart and soul into his film, spends his entire life savings to get this thing made.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once he's done with it and moves on to other parts of his career, has it parked on a, you know, external Lacy drive that's sitting on a shelf. And then 2 years, 3 years, 4 years go by of it sitting on a shelf and he goes to plug it in. The hard drive doesn't start up and that film's gone forever.
Yep. Corrupted or the cable's gone or what, like anything can happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we've all had a hard drive die on us at one point.
Oh God. I poured a glass of water into one by accident. I knocked it over. Oh, it was a spinning drive. No.
Anyway. I went to Curacao in 2013, 14.
Oh.
And had all of my photos from that on a external hard drive that ceased working, and I now have no photos of my time.
No! See, folks, this is what happens. You can't just, nothing is permanent. And that's not just, you know, me being existential about things.
So it's an interesting thing to kind of think about because there is such a push. You know, there's Martin Scorsese's foundation there, whose goal is to preserve film and go and find decaying film.
Yeah.
And, you know. Protect it on a film kind of format, like celluloid film format.
Which I actually looked into, and I think even in the like perfect condition, celluloid can stay good for like 80 to 100 years ish in like perfect humidity, perfect temperature. So even that, even trying to preserve that in its state, like it just won't work forever, you know?
And so it becomes like a really interesting question of like, what do we do?
Yeah, like, is it futile?
Time erases all. Like, you know, fuck it. Like, whatever. But like, are certain things just doomed to oblivion? Or is it possible to preserve all of this? It's a, like a really intense debate.
It is. And it's also interesting because these days... You know, we talk about physical media, like I'm constantly buying Blu-ray these days, but more and more films that are being released on streaming, they don't even get a physical release, you know, or anything like that. And, you know, we're talking about the indie filmmakers who like, you know, maybe they didn't have distribution. Maybe they didn't ever consider doing something like that. And then there is nothing that they could have done. Like, what are you going to print it? Like, it's like that doesn't really happen. Like you could, you know. Burn it to a DVD, I'm sure. But again, DVD players are pretty much gone. You can get a Blu-ray player now, but, you know, 10 years, will we have Blu-ray? Like, will Blu-ray players be sold? I don't know.
Well, and that's really the question. So, like, you know, if you get a Blu-ray release of something, you put copies out into the world, and, like, there's a potential that this is going to, if something happens, you can find one of those Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And they will still exist in some format.
Right.
And this is a similar kind of thing of what we're talking about with the film stuff is like a lot of these, the original, a lot of the older films, the original prints are gone, but they were copied and printed for distribution to, you know, hundreds and hundreds of theaters.
Right.
And, you know, it kind of like those are the ones that they're finding that are like rediscovering or like repairing parts of films that are degrading and things like that. And this is the same kind of thing is of like, if a Blu-ray is out there, if a physical, if some kind of physical media of this, of X film or whatever this, you know, that we're talking about here is out there, like you can recover it should the worst happen. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about like a streaming distribution or things like that, like tune in on Sunday, when we talk about Damsel, from Netflix, like, this movie is not getting a Blu-ray release. This Roadhouse. Is a Netflix movie. It's not Roadhouse. Yeah, it's not. It's not like there's not going to be DVDs of this. And that runs the risk of wherever Netflix is storing this stuff. If something catastrophic happens, and Netflix is like not a good example because like we were saying earlier, like the big studios are doing this kind of stuff. But like. You know, we'll talk about like Shudder films or things like that, where it's like, it's a smaller thing that they're not going to do necessarily a huge backup. Like what I'm getting at, there needs to be an attention paid to preserving this stuff.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of people, like we said at the top, have this mentality that like, oh, it's digital. It'll be around forever.
Right.
I can put it on the cloud and then it's there forever.
Right.
You know? And like, it's pretty good. There's a pretty good chance there, but like, it's not like unbreakable.
Yes, it's not unbreakable. And a perfect example is you can't play floppy disks anymore. CD-ROM, that's not that long ago, folks. Like we're talking about stuff that like there are phone chargers that you would use 15 years ago that you couldn't even find anything to plug that into now. Like, things change so fast.
I think of like FireWire 400, where it had like the electrical charge.
That was everything.
Just like,
That was everything. And now, and then, you know, you bring up, you know, the big studios, and I'm sure a lot of them are doing their due diligence, but like the legendary story of Toy Story 2 being deleted off of every hard drive, and then the one person who was working from home had a copy from 2 weeks ago because she was working on it from home and saved the day, and they just re-exported it and finished it. And it's like, this stuff happens. That was Pixar. Granted, it was early days of Pixar, but it's like they had 3-4 films under their belt. Like, this happens.
But how many production studios are at that phase right now?
Right, you know exactly.
I mean? How many production studios are like have a couple films that they've done and like they're that close to losing something?
Yes, exactly. And I'm sure it happens daily. Like, somebody loses a massive project. And again, we're also talking about studios that delete projects because they need a tax write-down. Like, we're talking Coyote versus Acme or Batgirl, like films that will probably never be seen. And the filmmakers are no longer allowed to have the work that they did, and it will be deleted. I don't think they're going to keep those films. Yeah. It just doesn't make sense. So it's like, you have studios that are losing films. You also have studios that are purposefully destroying films that have been made. So it's this, like, preservation is, it's different now than it used to be, but it's still just as important. And I wonder what Scorsese thinks of all of this. I mean, I'd like to talk to him about anything, but like about this specifically in this age, because, you know, 70 to 80% of all silent films are gone, like, forever.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. Guys, filmmaking has only been like an industry for like 100 years. Like,
yeah,
that's barely any time at all. And we already have lost 70% of the films, you know, at least of that era. So, you know, I hope people are taking stock of this and thinking about it, but it's a business too. And a lot of people, especially, you know, bringing it back to studio execs, they're just kind of like keeping it moving. And you have to have someone like Scorsese or PTA to be like, no, seriously, put this somewhere.
And the thing too is, like, you have to consider the scope of what we're talking about.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Because we're talking about films. Yeah, sure. You know, but we're talking about all of TV.
Yep.
All of it.
All of it.
Like, think of how many shows you have lined up right now that you're like, I want to watch that. Think of all of the shows that you love and rewatch all the time. Think of all of the shows that a friend mentioned once at a party that you're like, I've never even heard of that.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of content that there is that exists, like, is the mind boggles.
It's
so extensive. And, you know, like, the big stuff that we're talking about, the studio stuff, is going to get captured. But, like, what happens when you lose an episode of the A-Team is where my brain goes.
Sure.
You know, where it's like, you have all of the seasons except, like, there was a problem with one thing. So 5 episodes from the middle of season 3 are just gone forever.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. It's like we're not talking necessarily even about total loss. We're talking about partial loss where, like, you know, there was a problem, this was corrupted, and we lost, you know, I mean, similar thing to with the film. We lost 3-4 minutes of this in the middle. We can cut it together, but it's weird.
Like, right. We can't get that back. Yeah.
And that's the thing that really gets me is, like, the scope of it, of, like, there's so much that we're talking about.
Yeah.
That is just like, I mean, we create more content per minute than any time in, like, history.
Yeah.
And I'm including, like, you know, a year ago.
Right.
Hey, you know what? Let's make it tangible. Like, this like counts for your TikToks and stuff too.
Yes.
You know, like, all of your social posts and all that kind of stuff is like, it feels like it's just there, but, like, it's one catastrophic system failure away from not being there anymore.
Or that software just going away. Like, we've seen apps just go away. Like, Snapchat is a really interesting
Vine.
Vine, but it's like, for Snapchat, it's like, that was something that I used in high school, and I cataloged everything, man, everything through high school and college. And I'm like, well, it's there. If Snapchat stops making money, like, that's gone. And there's archives of years of my life that I just basically had in that archive, and it'll just be gone. And it's like, you could put it on another hard drive, but it's like, again, do you want to be moving everything from hard drive to, like, it's such a you really have to think about it. Like,
yeah,
every couple years we get a new hard drive, we get new technology that you then have to swap everything over. I mean, going from spinning discs to solid state drives, solid like, state. Is a huge thing. And then from solid state to whatever.
I have two spinning hard drives in enclosures sitting on my desk.
Yeah.
That like have pretty much everything that I like shot in college on them.
Yeah.
And they're mirrored on each other. So like if one fails, it won't be catastrophic. But I'm like, so much of everything I've done is just sitting right there and they're spinning hard drives. I'm like, I could turn both of those on one day and they might just not
go on,
boot up. Yeah. And I'm stressing myself out now.
Get those on SSDs, man.
Well, and that's the thing. I'm like, okay, well, I should get them up in the cloud. And I'm like, is that like the thing? Like it requires a level of attention that I think a lot of people just aren't like, I actually care. My brain just went, do I really care what's on these hard drives? I'm like, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
You do. Yeah.
I haven't watched any of my short films in a very long time, but like,
but that's fine.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It is. And nothing is permanent, guys. Let's just leave it at that. It's something that I think more people are becoming aware of too, because you see streaming. Oh, wait, that Netflix original is no longer on Netflix and I actually can't find it anywhere. Wonder where it went. Well, you'll probably never see it again. And that's where we're at. So I think people are becoming more conscious of it too. I mean, you don't have to buy Blu-ray and more plastic, but you know, keep it in mind, like these things are fragile and it's, you know, not as fragile as celluloid, but it's not far off. I mean, a hard drive, everything, even on the cloud, it's a server. Pour water in that room. Guess what? It's done. You know, that's all that you have. Well, so.
And like, you know, your hard drive, your spinning like hard drives there are still just like magnetic tape.
Yes.
You know, I mean? Not tape, but like, you know, it's not some infallible piece of tech, you know.
No, it's not.
All right, well, now that we've made
and with
now
that.
I'm like, now I'm flipping out here.
Now you're like, I gotta go start the transfer now.
I'm gonna start these up real quick, make sure they still turn on. Live reaction on the pod. I don't think they're plugged in, actually.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, jeez.
Oh, no. Oh, there they go. They're spinning.
Nice. Okay. Nice. Okay, good. Good.
Anyway. Let's bring it home.
Yes.
All of my hard drives have turned on. I can open them. This is good.
Beautiful. Wonderful day.
Let's go over here to our recommendations. Given our despair that we've put ourselves in now, our recommendation is going to be a film that is potentially in danger if not properly archived.
Yes, which honestly could go any direction at this point. There are many films that could be in danger.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's tough. It is tough, and it's weird because I'm not really, I wasn't sure what kind of like criteria I should be using for this. It's like I could go back to like old films, but I think Marty has those locked and loaded.
I went to one right away that I haven't watched in a very long time, and I feel like may have aged a little poorly. Oh. But I'll start, I guess, here. I'm gonna recommend a movie from 1999 called 200 Cigarettes.
Ooh, I know this film. How do I know this film?
This is a very, 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 very obscure movie. And I know this because I read about this movie when I was in college. And it took me a long time to hunt it down. The only way you can watch it right now is by buying the disc on Amazon. 200 Cigarettes takes place in 1981 New York City. And it's a bunch of 20-somethings trying to cope with life on New Year's Eve. The 20-somethings in question is an incredibly stacked cast in 2024. We're talking Ben Affleck, Casey Affleck, Dave Chappelle, Janine Garofalo, Kate Hudson, Courtney Love is in there, Jane Moore is in there, Paul Rudd, Christina Ricci.
Jeez.
Elvis Costello shows up for a minute. Like, oh, it's a massively stacked cast. And it's one of those like story, like small story kind of casts, or films where it's like, a bunch of different storylines going on at the same time.
Yes.
But as I recall, this movie was pretty good. It was very, appropriate for where I was in life. This movie takes place in the Alphabet City in New York City. And I watched this when I was living in Alphabet City in New York. So there are issues with it now. I think there's a little bit of a transphobic ending towards the end, but, so like qualifier on it, but,
sure.
I remember really liking this movie and I remember working really, really hard to find a disc for it. I don't think there's a lot of people paying attention to this movie and making sure that the Affleck Brothers 1999 film is holed up somewhere.
Yes, I'm positive that you're correct about that. I know of this film, but I've never seen it. And I don't know. Where can you find it, did you already say?
The only place you can find it is by buying the disc on Amazon.
That's when you know.
Yeah, it does look like it got a Blu-ray release at some point. So like somebody's got it somewhere, but it is 100% parked, like just on a drive somewhere right now.
Absolutely. Degrading.
So, yeah.
Oh, man, that is a good one. That's kind of like perfectly exactly what we're talking about. Mine is a film that I've talked about on this pod before. I don't think I've recommended it. It's a movie from 1971 called Wake in Fright, directed by Toby Kotcheff, starring Donald Pleasance. It's about a school teacher in Australia who's basically like, he's teaching in this really tiny town, and on vacation, he just wants to get away. And he goes, he misses his bus, and he has to stay in this old mining town called the Yaba, which is just a place where people just essentially end up and never leave. And it's not like a horror film, but it is horrific. There's things that go on where you're like, oh, this is like, if left to their own devices, what people would do in a lawless land. It's very... It's very intense, but also just a wonderful thriller. I thought it was really, really good. One that not a lot of people talk about, or it's not very well seen either. You can only find it on Amazon to buy right now. You might be able to rent it. Oh, it looks like you can rent it on YouTube or buy it on Amazon, and that's it. So you know where that's going. And, you know, it's... There's this like era of like 70s and 80s films, like where they were really churning them out because, you know, that was a high point for cinema. And a lot of these really amazing small films that were kind of like obscure, they just go away and nobody ever finds them again because, you know, like you said earlier, tens of thousands of things are produced every day. And this is one of those things that I think would go, I gotta buy this, honestly. I'm thinking about it right now. that's just gonna go away at some point. So if you haven't checked it out, Wake in Fright, it's great. It's really strange, but beautiful, and definitely had some serious inspiration or influence on the Royal Hotel, Kitty Green's film, Australian horror, you know? So yeah, that's my recommendation for this week.
Nice. What was the name one more time?
Wake in Fright.
Wake in Fright. All right.
Yeah, good stuff.
That's probably not a good pairing.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
All right. There we go.
Well, there we go.
Industry talk. Good stuff.
These movies could be lost, everyone.
They could be lost. So watch them while you can.
Yes.
It's worth it.
All right. Industry talk.
Yeah.
It's good to be back. This is like a good kind of palate cleanser post Oscars of like, okay, let's talk about what's going on.
Yeah. Not the same 12 films over and over and over.
We're done with Oppenheimer, y'all.
We are.
All right. Let's bring it home. Josh, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh man. People can find me on the internet on Letterboxd and on Instagram at Josh J. Fuller. And where can people find you on the internet, Willis?
You can find me on Letterboxd and Instagram at WillisFilm. And if you want to find the pod, you can find us on pixelsplitters.com, or you can find us on social on Letterboxd and Instagram at pixelsplitters, where you can find all of our recommendations including 200 cigarettes, and I've already again forgotten the
Wake
name
in Fright.
Wake in Fright. There we go.
Yeah.
Done. In the books.
There we
episode
go.
Episode 136.
Archived.
Yes, archived. Apparently on both of our computers, so we should probably...
We should... Yeah.
Talk about that.
We'll talk about that at some point.
Because I don't know about you, but they're definitely taking up space on my hard drive.
Yes, I keep dumping them to another hard drive, so that's a problem.
Yep. All right, well, I guess that'll be it. I'm going to take us out of here with a good old-fashioned end of